Good afternoon. How are you? It's Rona calling with you on Perceptions. It's 3:30, it's Tuesday, and it's lovely as always to be in your company. Great programme today with great guests and fabulous music and a lot of conversation. Joining me on the programme, I have Tom and Breege O'Neill. I don't know where I got Pat from, sorry about that. Who are a visually impaired couple who, I have to say, are just one of the coolest couples I think I've ever met. And recently they took part in GDIL's peer mentoring programme. So I'm going to be talking to them in just a matter of moments about their experiences on the programme and what else they've been up to as well. So they're a great couple. They're going to be joining me in just a couple of moments' time. Also on the programme, I have Derek from an organisation that supports people who are suffering from depression, because, you know, it's something that we really need to highlight and continue to highlight on the programme. So he's going to be joining me from Rise Up a little later on, around 4 o'clock. So if you want to get in contact with the programme, and please do so on 0876944500. Again, that's 0876944500 if you want to drop me a text, as always, with your comments and thoughts. I think that, as I say, suicide awareness and suicide prevention and more conversation needs to be had. So I'm very, very happy that he's joining me on the programme from Rise Up a little later on. And of course, Breege and Tom being on the programme as well. So it's going to be great fun indeed. Now, joining me now by phone, I have Tom and Breege O'Neill. I have to say, one of the nicest couples I think I've ever met, who are both visually impaired and who are just one of the nicest couples you could possibly meet, and recently joined Greater Dublin Independent Living on a peer mentoring programme. Now, they both join me now by phone. Hi Tom, hi Breege.
Hello Rona.
Hello, how are you both?
We're good.
So far so good. If the echo doesn't kill it.
Jeez, you sound very nervous, guys. I'm very nice, I promise. You know this already. How are you both anyway? You're all well?
Yes, not a bother, Rona.
Good stuff. Breege, you're good?
Yeah. Great.
Excellent
great
stuff.
Thank you.
So recently you took part in Greater Dublin Independent Living's peer mentoring programme with GDIL. Tell me a little bit about that, Tom. How did you enjoy that experience?
I think we have a little bit of
The experience was excellent.
Right.
Certainly I got an awful lot from the mentoring course, and I suppose we're only at phase one, and that we have the formalities done, and then we kind of move on to the practical.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to getting into the practical side of it in the next couple of months and seeing where it takes us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'd echo that too. I thoroughly enjoyed the course, and I learned an awful lot of things I didn't know. Stuff around social welfare and different things that people are entitled to and that sort of thing.
Mm. And I think, you know, you had the girl in from Citizens Information Centre making a presentation, and I would recommend to anybody listening that they would certainly go to their Citizens Information Centre, and there's a lot of stuff out there that we don't seem to know about, and there's entitlements that people are entitled to.
Mm.
And somebody as independent as Citizens Info will sit down with you and walk through details like that. I thought she was excellent. And like Susie Borden put across a lot of stuff that was invaluable, I think, to us as well in the course itself. And the stuff going forward, it'll be very good to us to have.
You're right. Actually, the course is quite informative about lots of different areas around about your rights and your entitlements and housing and vast array of different things. So it's very encompassing of many different topics.
For certain, yeah. There's a lot covered in the 6-7 sessions that we did actually have, and time just flew in, no doubt.
Mm-hmm. And Breege, tell me this now, because you're a husband and wife team and you were both doing this course together, how was that experience?
I think it was very good because, you know, sometimes one of us would pick up something that the other one wouldn't. And usually when we came home in the evenings, we discussed whatever the topic of the day was. And what I might have missed, Tom picked up, and vice versa, you know.
Yeah.
So I thought it was good.
And I think as well, like Rona, for those others who was on the course, maybe they had the the piece of paper in front of them that they could look at.
Yeah.
Bridget and I were the piece of paper for each other.
Yes.
And then we could pick up maybe what she left out. You know, not what we missed, I mightn't have heard, and Bridget had heard, you know.
Yeah.
So the two boys, the two of us worked as a team in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, working with you myself for the 6-7 weeks, I really enjoyed watching you working together, actually. It was a very nice experience for me. And I thought, because you're husband and wife and you were doing it together, that it might slightly infringe a little bit on you. Actually, I was completely wrong, because I think it only enhanced your experience from what I observed.
I think we would have said that too. Yeah, definitely.
Mm.
I suppose we've been, you could look at it many ways, but let's say that Bridget and I worked pre our retirement together in the one office for 7 or 8 years, and our work kind of complemented each other.
Mm.
And what I did, part of the next phase, Bridget moved on and did that phase and stuff like that. So I suppose we've been very, very used to working with each other in that sense.
Mm. And so both of yourself, Bridget, and Tom, you both have a visual impairment, as you've nicely touched upon yourselves. And I suppose it was a different learning experience for you being on the course with GDIL. But the other area that I wanted to touch upon as well, because I was very interested, because we had had many conversations around this, was about how you came to acquire your beautiful dogs, which, shall I point out, are both from Cork as well. So their barks have a Cork accent, which is always very interesting.
Absolutely.
Oh, they have a Montanati accent. They bark. the B-O-R-K, our dogs too.
The bark, yes. Very nice bark indeed. So tell me how that experience was and how that all came to be.
Well, Tom had started because he was the first one in the house to get a guide dog.
I suppose I have an eye condition called retinitis pigmentosa, and it is a family genetic condition. And my granny to my mother to three out of 8 of 4 children, me being one of them.
Mm.
So then I had to address my eye condition. Eyesight loss back in the 70s when I left school.
Mm.
But it was the early 80s before I literally got around to it, if you like. And by then I was at a stone wall. Mm. I had no mobility. I had Bridge, I had a mortgage, I had children. And basically I had to get into work into Dublin. We live out in Balbriggan.
Yeah.
And I got my first long cane course in England. There was nothing in Ireland in terms of long cane training.
Mm.
I applied in 1982 for my very first dog. I waited 2.5 years before a dog came up.
Mm.
That was April of 85. And I continue to say my life switched right around at that stage. I had no comfort in walking out, going to work, anything like that.
Mm.
Up until I got Frankie, my first dog. And after that, my mobility just came freedom. I got freedom from it. And we've been involved in fundraising ever since because of that. 85 to 92, I had Frankie. Then I had Bruce, Cola, Nemo. And I currently have Gatsby, the great Gatsby.
Yeah.
And I missed out on Sarge in between, whom I had for a short while.
Mm.
And then, Breed, you got your first guide dog in
1991. Yeah, I grew up with a sight problem, so it wasn't a shock to me when mine started to get much worse.
Mm.
I have congenital cataract with other side issues.
Right.
So I began to have serious eye problems in 1989-90. And like that, I saw the way Tom could get around so easily with the dog. I decided to apply, and I wasn't as long waiting as he was. And I got my first dog called Gypsy. So I'm just on my third dog now, who I have Gypsy, Abby, and I have Eunice now.
Yeah.
But Eunice is almost 10.
Right.
So
he's retiring soon.
Going back to Cork to have a successor dog to Eunice.
Mm.
And I'll have to do the course all over again and get a younger dog and so on. But
so tell me about that process when you do have to go back down to Cork again to get your next dog. What actually happens?
The very same thing as happens the first time you go down, except that you're retiring your old dog, which is a very sad time and not easy.
Mm.
You know, mentally, and that it's not easy to hand over to a young puppy dog.
Right.
But the process is the same. You go down to Cork, you meet your new dog, you go through all the processes of the different short walks and longer walks, and you stay in Cork for almost 3 weeks, full time.
So it's quite intensive.
Full time. Yeah. Yes, we have a beautiful centre down in Ballincollig now in Cork, and we have full residential accommodation, hotel accommodation, I'd call it. Mm. Get my breakfast, my dinner, my lunch and all handed up to me. It's great.
And so tell me, Breach, how do they match dogs with potential new owners? Is there a matching process?
Yeah. When the dog is coming up to retirement age, they will come and do what they call an assessment. The instructor will take you out walking and he will pretend he's the dog or she. And they just gauge your speed of walk, you know, your different mannerisms, and also the amount of work the dog might have to do. With all my other dogs, I worked in the city and travelled in and out every day, so I'd have to have a very resilient dog that took in all the traffic and train work and all the rest. But now that I'm retired and life is much quieter and all, I'd probably get, you know, I wouldn't need that high level of intense, we'd say the dog wouldn't need that high level of intense training, you know.
I see. So, although I can't imagine life ever being quiet for yourself and Dom, to be realistic about it.
We tend to be busy, all right.
Yes. We kind of live a full life there, so we do. You know, you just touched, at the beginning you were talking about the mentoring course there, and Bridget mentioned something, the day that your dog retires and the day that you meet your new dog, that's an area that for me, many guide dog owners probably could benefit enormously from the course that we've just completed.
And so, Tom, tell me,
in your life there.
Tell me a little bit about that hole that you're speaking of. I mean, try and explain that transition, if you can at all.
I think you. I can leave the house. I'm going to go for a walk in a few minutes. Okay, so I go out my door now, and my dog will automatically turn right. Why? Because he's done it 1,000 times and he knows that the grass is down at the bottom of the road and there's a reasonable chance he'll get a free run. Okay? I get him back from the grass, I cross the road straight across. He'll automatically assume that because that's the sort of normal walk I'll have up the street. Now, I get my new dog. I have to teach him all that. Okay. I don't have, for this last 6-7 years of my past dog, if you like this work, I don't have to think about that route that I'm going to do to the train station. Mm. With my new dog, I have to think of it day by day by day. Mm. You have a very, like Bridget and I, obviously as husband and wife, we live together. But really and truly, at times, I probably spend more time in the company of my dog than I would in the company of Bridget. Mm. We are going together. You know the dog will take you into the city. You'll do your bits and pieces in the city. You put your confidence into the dog. If you don't, it doesn't work really well for you in mobility terms. But you put your confidence into that dog. You work with that dog so closely, so hour by hour. And then all that's taken away from you because you're starting back with a new dog and you've got to build and build and build that confidence back up again. That's where the hole in my life is. You get terribly fond of them. Terribly, terribly fond of the dogs.
Of course you do. And I mean, of course, both Gatsby and Eunice are absolutely gorgeous dogs. I love them both myself at this point. They're beautiful. But I suppose, as you say, it's a huge hole. But how long does it take? I suppose I'll ask both of you this because I suppose it's individual to each person. But how long does it take for that confidence, do you both feel, to build in this new in a new dog?
6 months, Bridget.
I was going to say 6 to 12 months. To be totally confident and totally. Now, the dog will do its work, but you have to be confident in the dog to do its work and not be thinking of, oh, well, the other dog used to do this, that, and the other. You have to try and do that. And then we all build up habits. Mm-hmm. And some of them mightn't be too good.
Yeah.
You know, everything goes back to the basic training every time you go to Cork for a new dog.
There's a correct way, we'll say, you're walking up a footpath and the dog is trying to walk centre footpath. His next point of stop is the next curb, the next step down. That's the correct way. Now, if you're so used to crossing a very minor side street, you'll come up to the crossing, you will not put your feet in the right place to take the proper step down. You will say forward to the dog, but the dog will also get into the habit of saying, he never stops really at this particular crossing. And the dog will go with it and across. And you get your new dog, they're the bad manners that Rach outlined. Yes. You've built up bad habits.
You have to get back into it again.
Into basics.
Yeah. You kind of have to realign your own bad habits as well.
You do.
I think many drivers, Rona, you know, after 10 years driving, they've created a certain amount of habits. I wonder if they got back to have to do the driving test 10 years later on.
Valid point.
Because I know I'd fail with my dogs 5 or 6 years down the way if I wasn't safe.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's true.
That's
why
we stay in Cork.
I think it's a very valid point, and I think, to be fair, a lot of people can relate to it in different ways, shape and form. You know, you could relate to it around a new PA and maybe changing from an old PA and then learning that, to work with a new person again, or working with a new home help or a new wheelchair or a new, you know, appliance, whatever it is. It all takes a lot of time. So we've talked about how fabulous and busy your lives are at the moment. Of course, you've just done the peer mentoring training program. What else is in the pipeline for the two of you?
Well, we've just come back from a wedding down in Kennedy Castle.
Beautiful.
Down in Tipperary, is it?
No.
Offaly.
Lovely.
And we had a wedding in Benahavis, which is near Porto Venus in Spain, three weeks ago. They were all since the course finished in July.
Oh, wow. And so tell me, now that the course is finished, are you both planning on carrying on and putting this, what you've learned, into action with the mentoring?
Well, I certainly hope to. I absolutely hope to. And I'm looking forward to Valerie, who was so, so good to us all in that course, nominating people for us that we can go in and chat with and work through that process and learn those skills and put the course into action.
You're
very much looking forward to that, so I am.
And so tell me, what words of wisdom would you give to anybody at the moment now who's thinking about doing the peer mentoring course, and how would you be promoting it to them?
Well, I think I can connect the guide dog thing and I can connect the peer mentoring. I said I was waiting 2.5 years. I was before I got my dog. I'd say I waited 3 years before that, wondering, should I? Should I not? And I kicked myself when I did get my dog and I was settled in after 6 months. Tom, you should have done that so, so far back. You wouldn't have as many marks on your forehead and you wouldn't have got introduced to all the poles in Balbriggan by first name because you walked into them. But then I got to it. I got there. I think if this course had come my way 5 or 6 years ago, I would have done, because if I knew now the things I know now, I wish I could have known those skills and been able to put those skills into being, where I've sat down many times with people who are thinking of getting a guide dog. Is it the right thing to do? Is it the wrong thing to do? I only chatted to them, but if I had the skills that we learned in the course, I would have structured my 5 or 6 talks with them in a much better way. So I'd say to anybody, go for it. You'll learn from it.
Breach.
You have to learn. It's good. There's so much in there and you will learn from it.
And it's a skill also to be able to sit down and listen to somebody. And let them talk and maybe make their own decisions with your prompting. You know, it's a good skill, and I just hope I'll be able to put it into action.
I have no doubt in my mind that both yourself and Tom will be brilliantly putting it both into action. I'm going to take my leave from this conversation, because I could just keep chatting to you all day, and I have no doubt in my mind that we will be chatting again in the future. Just on a final note, if somebody is thinking, who has a visual impairment, is thinking about getting involved with the Irish Guide Dogs, what details can you give?
I would say the local number 1850 506 300, and ask for client services department, or simply info@guidedogs.ie. And I'd say to anyone that has the slightest thought in their head, I might benefit from a guide dog, I might benefit from long cane training, I might benefit from daily living skills, because all those things are taught there as well. Make that phone call, send that email, meet up with somebody, and go for it. Again, like the mentoring course, go for it.
Just go for
because
it.
Because you'll learn from it.
And you know what? It's life-changing. It is life-changing. Listen, thank you both very, very much. It was an absolute pleasure to speak to you both. And no doubt I'll be speaking to you again soon. Thank you very much indeed to Breege and to Tom. Speak again soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And that was Breege and Tom O'Neill. Absolutely incredible couple. And just brilliant fun. Incredibly nice and kind and informative. And do you know something? They're right about the peer mentoring programme. If you are interested in getting involved with it, please do contact us at Greater Dublin Independent Living on 087 1179 112 and we'll give you all the information that you need because we're always running the peer mentoring programme with GDIL. And of course, you can always get in contact with the Irish Guide Dogs as well in Cork. In the last 12, 15 hours, a real sad situation has happened with the sad passing of Robin Williams, outstanding comedian and actor as well. And you know something, it really brought to mind to me too about the importance of supporting each other around the area of depression. So much so that I was thinking about it last night that I got onto a wonderful organisation called Reach Out. And joining me now by phone, I have Derek Chambers, who is involved with the organisation. Hi Derek, how are you doing?
I'm good, Rona. How are you?
Very, very good. Very, very sad situation that's occurred in the last 12 hours. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today on the programme, because I think it's something that we really genuinely need to highlight on the show, actually quite a lot, because it's not discussed enough at all around the area of depression. So tell me a little bit about your organisation and its founding time and what you do.
Sure. I mean, I suppose the first thing to say about our organisation and what we do is that we're a service for everyone. And as you said, you know, conversations about mental health and depression are really important for all of us, not just for you know, the people that might be directly affected. But it's really a public health issue. Because we all go through tough times. And if we're not going through a tough time ourselves, we'll know somebody who is and who knows what's going on for anyone in their life at any given time. So our services for young people aged 12 to 25 in particular, our service is an Australian import to some extent. The service model started in Australia about 15 years ago, and it came over to Ireland about 5 years ago. And what we do is try to take the mystery out of mental health, try to make it easier for people to have conversations about mental health and to give people information about getting through tough times. We do that by providing information on kind of common mental health topics, like you've mentioned depression and anxiety, but also on the everyday things that affect our mental health. I suppose the important thing that we try to do as well is to explain support services and explain informal support as well. So to give people encouragement to talk to each other, to talk to friends, and to look out for friends that they might be concerned about. I suppose taking that first step can be a big step, but it's a really important step. So we try to facilitate that as much as we can.
And I suppose really, Derek, the thing that I wanted to really address with you today and highlight is if there's somebody in your world at the moment and you are worried about them or you have concerns with them around their mental health, what can you do and what should you be looking out for?
Yeah, I mean, look, the most important thing and the simplest thing I can say is if you're concerned about someone, don't ignore the concerns. You're concerned for a reason. You've picked up on something for a reason. There's usually there is something behind it. If somebody is obviously feeling low or their behaviour has suddenly changed. So the most important thing is to ask the question. And I know that sounds easier than it might actually be in a situation. It's maybe not the easiest thing in the world to go up to a family member or a friend and say, listen, I'm a little bit worried about you. Is everything okay? You know, it sounds easy me saying that to you now, but actually putting yourself in that situation, for some people that might be easy to do, but for others that can be a hard step to take. But please do it.
And is there, and that's a very vital and important first step. Is there? I know I'm getting very generic about it, but I'm doing this for a very specific reason. So if you're concerned and you want to ask this question to them. Is there a best way or a specific way you should ask it, or a certain place you should ask it, or, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, look, I mean, I think the key thing is about the time and place, not so much about how you put it or what you say. I mean, what you say should be every day, and it should be simple. But the important thing is to ask the question, ideally, at a time and in a place where you can have a conversation. There's no point, you know, whether it's a good friend or a family member, there's no point in trying to have that conversation when you know that either you're busy and that you're going to have to shoot off somewhere, you don't have the time to hear what the answer might be and to fully listen to what the answer might be. Or likewise, if you know that in that moment in time they have to be somewhere else or they're preoccupied with something else. So the important thing is to try, ideally, to pick a time and a place where for both of you, you have a bit of room and you could talk if needs be. And look, I mean, a lot of the time, asking someone if they're okay can lead to a conversation where you learn that, you know, that there are things on their mind. It isn't necessarily going to be a conversation about acute distress or crisis. It can be that too, but it won't necessarily be. So, you know, from that point of view, try to allow the space for a conversation. Don't necessarily fear that the worst, but do take account of that possibility.
Okay, and let's assume then that you've asked this question, and one scenario is the person answers you and says, "I'm grand, I'm fine," and knocks that on the head pretty much immediately. Where can you go from there?
You've asked the question, and the situation is okay.
Yeah, well, they're just kind of saying, "Oh, well, I'm grand, you know, I'm fine," and they've just kind of put a wall up straight away, and you know.
But there is a limit to what you can do. But I suppose in that scenario, the most important thing you can do is to let someone know that you are there if they do feel like talking at a later stage. And also remind them that there is other supports out there if they do feel like talking or if they do need practical support or advice at a later stage. And, you know, that is possible that somebody will want to just, you know, deflect your interest and deflect your attention and say, "I know I'm grand." And I actually had that scenario myself in the last few days on a personal level. Yeah. But having asked the question or made the call or sent the text, whatever it is, even if you've never actually had the conversation with the person, they know because you broached it. They know that if they are or if they do want to talk or if they do want to open up or if they are really, really struggling days or weeks down the road, that you are someone that they can turn to, and they're more likely to turn to you because they know that you're okay having the conversation or that you're there to support them.
Okay, let's go with the other scenario that you're after asking the question and somebody completely opens up to you and you're not really sure how you can support them. They've opened up, they've told you what's going on, what's wrong. Now, I know a listening ear is a healing ear, and that's always very, very true. And you can't underestimate the value of that. Where can you send them, or what supports can you give them once they've opened up to you?
Yeah, I mean, look, that's a really important question as well. There's a limit to what any of us can do, really. But if it does come to a very serious conversation where, you know, you're concerned about somebody's well-being or they're concerned about their own well-being, it's important to keep the person safe in the short term, but to get that extra bit of support that he or she might need. It'll depend on the circumstances, but the family doctor or the GP is one first port of call that you can turn to. But there's other support services out there as well that you can find through our own website, through reachout.com. There's a lot of, depending on what the issue is, a lot of really, really good responsive and available supports in the voluntary sector, from Pieta House and Console to Samaritans. Depending on what the issue is, there's BodyWise. There's a world of support out there that people maybe aren't aware of or aren't quite sure how to access. So, you know, keeping the person safe in the short term and getting that extra bit of support, whether through the GP, is the best thing to do. And if you do need to look up further supports or want to get information on support services, the internet is in most people's pockets now. You know, most people have smartphones or access to a laptop.
Yeah.
Log on to reachout.com and look up services and supports there.
You're worried about somebody and you're concerned, but you're a little unsure whether it is something to be concerned about. What would be the top five things that would give you a kind of a signpost that something might not be right with somebody who, and they might be having issues around mental health? What are the top things to be looking out for?
I mean, every case is going to be different, but I suppose, again, just going back to the very start, your gut is the first thing to listen to. And if your gut tells you that you're worried about someone or that there's a reason to be concerned, go with that. But otherwise, it's I suppose, on two spectrums. It's a person's feelings, how they're feeling, and their behaviour. So, you know, if somebody is obviously looks depressed or is saying that they're depressed or down, if they're withdrawing from social interaction or withdrawing from the things that they would normally enjoy, That's a warning sign, and that's something to watch out for. And then behaviour in terms of sudden changes in eating habits, in alcohol consumption, in drug taking, in sleep patterns. Any sudden changes like that would be concerning as well. And I suppose the other thing to say is that people will act differently, obviously be depressed or change the way they behave in response to things that happen in their lives. So there might be a very good reason why somebody is obviously feeling different or behaving different. But, you know, if there doesn't seem to be any apparent reason, and if the changes in behaviour or their low mood is going on for a period of time, for a couple of weeks, then it would be really important to get that extra bit of support.
That's actually, you were just leading me on very nicely to my next question. I was about to say, if, you know, how long should that be going on? I mean, you're saying a matter of weeks, really.
Yeah, I mean, that's the typical advice that GPs or psychologists or psychiatrists would give in relation to depression in particular, that if feelings and behaviours, like if depressed mood and behaviours like disturbed sleep or eating patterns go on for more than 2 weeks, that's the conventional rule of thumb. But, you know, like,
everybody's different.
So just going back to the gut feeling is probably the most important thing you can do. And you know yourself, sometimes it's not even possible to articulate it, but you get a funny feeling about a friend of yours or a funny feeling about a family member or somebody you're in work with. And it's those funny feelings that we really need to not ignore. And, you know, quite often there's a very obvious and logical explanation. So do try and ask the question, are you okay? And I know it's not easy. So, you know, sometimes it might give people comfort to do a little bit of research online beforehand and to try and understand a bit more about what it is they're concerned about. You know, it could be something specific like gambling or mentioned eating disorders already, or maybe it's depression.
Or they might have had a bereavement, or they could be worried about money, or they could be worried about family and friends, or they might be communicating well with their family and friends, or it could be a multitude of different things. I suppose, Derek, for anybody who's listening at the moment, who is feeling now listening to us chatting, that they might be suffering from depression, and they're listening, and they're after taking that step and acknowledging it and having that awareness in themselves, what's the first piece of advice you would give them now to anybody listening currently?
Take the first step. Whatever feels right for you, whether it's going online to get a bit of extra information, phoning a support service like Samaritans, making an appointment with your GP. And again, you know, that might be a very, very big step for someone to take who's listening to us. But please do take that first step. And it can be a small step, but a step towards getting support, whether that's initially, you know, talking to a friend, right through to engaging with health services. Just take that first step in whatever way feels right for you towards a positive way of getting through it. Because, you know, we do all go through tough times. But with that extra bit of support, we can get through them as well.
I think you're right. I think it's something that we all need to start addressing. Why do you think, though, that people still have such trouble talking around mental health issues? Why do you think there's still such a stigma around it?
maybe in some ways, maybe it's because we don't or haven't really seriously addressed it as an issue that's relevant to all of us.
Yeah.
I know there's been a lot of campaigns, and there are a lot of excellent services out there that try to improve services and supports around mental health. But too often the conversation is about the one in four, or too often the conversation is about needing to break the stigma of mental illness.
Yeah.
I think if we had a genuinely open conversation that involved all of us about mental health, and that we start thinking about mental health as a starting point, and not mental illness, because quite often when we talk about mental health, you know, the substance of the conversation is actually about mental illness, and that ends up precluding or leaving out a lot of people out of the conversation.
Yes.
You're not gonna change minds about mental health if the conversation doesn't matter to all of us, as many of us as possible.
I think you're right. I think you create a very, very valid argument, and I couldn't agree with you more. I think, you know, your own mental health is a human rights issue, and I think we all have to be aware of the fact that at some point or another we are all affected by it, because everybody has highs and everybody has lows, and, you know, we all have to try and deal with them. So I think we can be all affected by this on a daily basis, and different parts of our lives throughout time, you know. And I think the sooner that people have a more open conversation and becomes part of the day-to-day conversation, just becomes part of the norm of chatting, then things will improve vastly. Yeah. Thank you very, very much for taking the time to talk to me. If people want contact, reach out, how can they do so?
Just log on to reachout.com, and you'll get all the information about our organisation, and you can contact us through that, or find us on Facebook as well. It's Reach Out Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
So not to be confused with the Australian or the US Reach Out. You can like them too, but like us first.
Yeah, like you first. So it's www.facebook.com/ReachOutIreland. And you're an outstanding organisation, and I thank you so much for my late email last night and for you responding to me so fast this morning. I just feel it's something that we still need to continue to have more conversations about on a weekly basis. So thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me, Derek. I really do genuinely appreciate it. Take care, and we'll talk to you again very, very soon. Thank you.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. And there was Derek Chambers there from Reach Out. And he's right. It's only when it becomes part of our daily conversation and our normal vocabulary around this, around mental health, and realising that we are all affected by it in some way, shape or form throughout our lives, and nobody goes unscathed, and we all really should be there to support each other. If there is somebody that you are concerned about or worried about, or you're concerned or worried about yourself, please do get in contact with Reach Out. I promise you, it's a wonderful organisation, and they will give you loads of help. And there are many other wonderful organisations out there around mental health issues as well. If you do want to get in contact with me, please do so on 0876944500. I'm only dying to know all your thoughts and comments as well. But my thanks there to Derek and Chambers from Reach Out. And as I say, it's a wonderful organisation. Do log on to them. If there is somebody in your life that you are concerned about, and maybe their eating habits have changed, or their sleeping pattern has changed, or their mood has been dipping for the last number of weeks, take the time to ask the question. I know it's a scary thought, and I know you'd be concerned about asking it and phrasing it and worried about maybe the repercussions of it, but it'll probably be the best gift that you'll give that person, is giving them a listening ear. And never underestimate the power of a listening ear. So I urge you to do that, really. If you are a person that is affected yourself, get in contact with Reach Out or any of the other wonderful organisations that Derek spoke about there on the line. So there are many people to speak to, and you're not alone. I promise you, you're not alone. Once you take that first step, it really will be worth your while. That's another show wrapped up for another week. I can't believe it. My thanks so much, as always, to you for tuning in and taking the time to be with me every Tuesday from 3:30 to 4:30. Always great, as always, to be in your company. Don't forget, the phone line and text lines are open on 0876944500. My thanks, as always,
to my lovely guests for joining me on the programme today, to Tom and to Breach, who are just a delightful couple, and happily could talk to them for hours upon hours and talking about the GDIL peer mentoring programme that we ran with the Greater Dublin Independent Living. Of course, if you want information about that, it's 087 1179 112. That's 087 1179 112. And you'll be getting on directly to me around that, because that's what I do for a living with Greater Dublin Independent Living, along with my colleague Valerie Bow. And of course, thank you as well to Derek Chambers from Reach Out about talking to me around depression and supporting each other around that topic, and supporting each other around more clearer conversations around it, and make it part of daily conversations with every person that you come in contact with. It's only when we make it the norm in conversation of the day to day that we'll break down this stupid stigma that exists. Because you know what? We don't need the stigma to exist. We need to help each other and support each other. And that's it for me for another week. I will talk to you again next Tuesday. Have an absolutely gorgeous week, and I will talk to you all again very, very soon.